And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, Bathrob Spear's Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor on the Streets, the April 24th, 2003 show, with special guest, bubble blower Tom Noddy. Stay with us. Kidding from an ancient album with Phil Free there, of course, Sleep on the Mayor's Lawn, since there doesn't seem to be any place else to sleep. Of course, there's the mayor's bakery, or possibly, who knows, the mayor's house. The mayor has numerous pieces of property, but most important, of course, is the reality that we have no legal place for people to sleep at night in Santa Cruz. There are 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people tonight who will have there'll be space for 39 of them in inside shelter on the floors of churches. And the rest of them face $54 sleeping ban tickets if police choose to go after them, as they have frequently done. And they also, of course, are driven into unsafe areas. Even if the police don't go after them, they have to be afraid to gather in groups, they have to be afraid to use well-lit areas, and they have to be afraid to even use police services. And who knows, maybe doing some interviewing tonight at the post office, where there are some homeless people apparently gathering under the eaves of the post office. Some people have the notion that because it's federal property, it's not in the city's jurisdiction. It is. But I'm not suggesting the police actually like to go after and rouse people. But the fact of the matter is, giving people this power and also putting pressure on them to remove homeless people from visible places has bad results. And we're going to be talking more about that when we play a special segment of a tape on the onslaught of bigotry in San Francisco. Of course, KGO is sort of bigot central for a lot of this stuff. And activist Becky Johnson sent them a fax and got some interesting responses on the KGO show with Pete Wilson, not the governor, the broadcaster. And we'll be looking at that later. But as I said before, we have coming into the studio with us shortly bubble blower, community activist, sometime van dweller, Tom Noddy, who's also a local resident. He's lived near Loudoun Nelson Center for, what, two decades? Something like that. I'm not quite sure if it's been that long, but I know I roomed with him for about half a year to a year, and he's been fighting to stop gentrification there for a long time. We're going to talk with him. And he's also been involved with helping street performers. He helped put together the street performers' voluntary guidelines, which were, of course, destroyed by the Porter Riley downtown ordinances last summer, and then the Riley Kennedy ordinances this January. I call them the Porter Riley ordinances because they're the people who spearheaded them in the summer, and then I call them the Kennedy Riley ordinances because that's Riley's the mayor and Kennedy's the vice mayor. But in fact, the whole council voted for this trashy bunch of regulations in the final analysis, and that, of course, is going to be coming up for discussion. Before Tom Arrives, she'll be coming in soon. I wanted to say you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is www.microradio.net/FRSC if you're listening to us on the net. You can call in at 427-3772. I've got backup in the studio. Jeffrey Gale is going to be giving us a report from the Farr shindig, Representative Farr's appearance at the Veterans Hall last night. I'll be doing a brief update on the Capitola 13 press conference and visit to the district attorney's office yesterday, which was quite successful in its own way. And we'll also be doing, hopefully, a follow-up on what do you do when you're stopped by a police officer for an infraction offense downtown, like chalking on the sidewalk, or perhaps chalking in the street with an accusation that you're chalking on the sidewalk, as I faced and face in court when I was ticketed for that about two months ago. And what kind of rights do you have? What kind of things do I recommend? Not an attorney, but have had some experience with this in terms of my own personal experience with the police, as well as observing a lot of that going on. We have a quick call here coming in. I say quick because I'm going to try to get in a little tape before Tom gets in there, but let's see what the caller's got to say. Hi there, caller.
Hey, Robert. Hi. Let me turn my volume down here. I met you at the city council meeting when they were having the Lighthouse Point issue, and we were the union people down there griping and complaining about the contractor that's doing the 1010 Pacific Avenue job.
I'm glad to hear you calling. We've been trying to get your union for, 6 months now to call in? I'm really pleased to hear you. Thanks.
Well, I'm just a member. You know, I'm just a grunt. Nobody official.
Well, that's fine, but probably know what's happening, huh?
Exactly. 23 years in the trade, mm-hmm. You know, and we're really disappointed with this choice of this contractor.
Let's tell the folks out there, we're talking about the building at Cathcart and Pacific, that huge building where there's a high crane.
Yes, there's a tower crane there. That's correct. It's 1010 Pacific Avenue. It's a five-story residential, will be a residential structure, mm-hmm. with some low-income housing.
Uh-huh.
And this guy, Daniel Silveri III, is a real notorious non-union contractor.
Mm-hmm.
He's out of Canada. City West Structures Incorporated, the company he bought into, is out of Canada. All of the iron workers who are doing the rebar down there are non-union out of the Pacific Northwest. A lot of the other people there, you know, appear to be not even legally documented people who have a right to work in the country. Their status is kind of marginal. They're supposed to be paying prevailing wages and fringe benefits, which is about $30 an hour on the check, and then the benefit package on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
We know they're not doing that. Matter of fact, we know for a fact that they've been paying some of those guys with personal checks instead of payroll checks.
Now, isn't there a requirement, a city requirement, that the city has to can't do business with firms that don't pay prevailing wages?
Exactly right. Unfortunately, somebody has to monitor that process, and if the people who are supposed to monitor that process don't do their job very well, then by the time that the job gets done, the project is completed, they've taken the money and they've left, and they're on to the next big project, you know.
Who's supposed to be monitoring this? Is this a city function?
Well, the city has some obligation in that matter. And then because there's public money involved, redevelopment credits and public tax money, also the state labor people have an obligation to ensure that they're paying proper wages and fringe benefits.
Mm-hmm. And I know that night before last Tuesday at the city council, I got there too late, but I heard that a number of your members, your union's members, made a rather impressive showing at the oral communications segment.
Yeah, we all, you know, showed up, and about four or five of us got to address the issue and basically told the city council that also sit as the redevelopment agency that essentially they gave this work away because of the low bid and the fact that this company was able to come in a couple of million dollars under all of the other legitimate contractors should have immediately raised a red flag that you can't underbid a job that size unless you're going to cheat on the wages and the fringe benefits, and you're going to cut corners every chance you get.
Well, you're not calling our city council a scab city council, are you?
No, but I'm saying that I'm taking them to task for not properly evaluating the contractor, taking a good hard look at the contractor's track record, the failed, you know, projects that they've left behind where they've not paid proper wages and benefits, and the fact that they're just notoriously non-union.
And the name of this company again is?
The contractor himself is called Donald Silveri III, mm-hmm. and then the name of his company is City West Structures Incorporated.
Now, surely you've gone to that fine pro-union council member Tim Fitzmaurice, the Green Party giant. What has he had to say about this?
Well, you know, I don't think I've personally talked to any of them directly, but I was the first person to speak to him on the oral communications mm-hmm. portion of the meeting. And essentially what I told them is I've been doing this work for 23 years. I'm a taxpayer. I'm a local resident. I'm a union man. All my money that I've made in those 23 years has essentially been spent here in the Bay Area. That unfortunately they've got these people who are not local people who came in from the Northwest who are doing all of this work non-union. They're not getting the proper wages and benefits. There's supposed to be a provision where they hire 50% local. They won't do it. When a bunch of us union guys showed up down there to apply for work, they rather than give us a application, they ask us for a resume, which is rather unusual for mm-hmm. this type of work. You know, it's when you're an hourly employee, you generally fill out an application, mm-hmm. and if your credentials are acceptable, you go to work. But, right. I mean, they would have nothing to do with us, unfortunately. And, you know, and this kind of resembles, you remember when the sewer treatment plant was done not too many years ago, they hired an out-of-state contractor named Humphrey. That was a $40-plus million project.
What year was that, do you remember?
I don't remember the exact year, but it's only about 4 or 5 years back that project, came out of the ground.
Another Rotkin Kennedy special, those were the people.
Well, I mean, same basic problem. They get this big non-union contractor who comes in from out of state. I believe they were from Washington State, and they brought a lot of non-union people with them, and then they just, created a bunch of problems as they went along. And then naturally the taxpayers ended up bailing them out, at the end of it. And had they just hired, a legitimate contractor that was a California licensed contractor, they probably would not have had the problems that they did have. And so, I mean, it was another example of a slap in the face where they talk about living wages.
Well, what's the union going to do about this? I know that the issue was raised as early as a year ago almost.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, my union was lagging and should have been down there when it started up out of the ground. Mm-hmm. But they weren't. The carpenters have been the only ones who have been down there steadfastly picketing away, trying to get some attention focused on it and get things turned around.
What about the local media? We're a local media.
I noticed that the Santa Cruz Sentinel had some an article on the Lighthouse Field thing and the dog issue, but there wasn't no peep about the issues that we raised.
Maybe you should start picketing the Sentinel, too.
Well, I don't know if it'd do any good. Do you think it would help?
Well, I think a union picket line across the Sentinel saying, please don't subscribe, or, send your money instead to...
You have to be careful on those issues, because if you establish a secondary boycott, then you get in trouble with the federal laws. Essentially the lawyers, I guess, tell us, what we can and can't do, and it's like walking on eggs. You've got to be very careful what you say and how you say it and who you say it to.
It would seem to me, by the way, what's your name, caller?
My name is John Callahan, Robert.
I appreciate that, John. And you're with which union?
I'm an iron worker.
So
23 years, union iron worker.
And you've stepped in to join the carpenters and demanding...
Well, we were sort of parallel to them. I mean, that's the thing is, if we collude together, then it becomes... there are some legal issues involved. So it just so happened that we happened to be down there picketing about our issue, and they happened to be picketing about their issue. And it was sort of a parallel action.
Just a coincidence.
But we were not actually coordinating with them, because if we did, then we'd get in some kind of legal jam.
It looks like the lawyers have got you tied up in knots here.
Unfortunately, years ago they established what they call the two-gate system, so that non-union contractors could go on the same job site as the union people. Uh-huh. And so then they'd have an A gate and a B gate, and all of the people who are union had to go through one gate, and all of the people who are non-union had to go through the other gate. And basically then they shackled the union's ankles by only allowing them to pick at the non-union gate. Then that didn't prevent the other building trades from going through the union gate. So essentially they castrated the union's ability to shut a job down. So then all you're doing essentially is you're having a informational picket that you have your sign that states what your grievance is and who you are.
Now, what can people do to help you? Who could people contact to support the union?
Well, I would say write to the city council. If you see somebody who has the petition on that issue and you're comfortable with the language, sign that petition. Send the city council a note and just tell them that you're distressed that this work is, this
number to call
downtown project is going to a big non-union out-of-country contractor.
The number to call, by the way, for those listening who want to support prevailing wage and, you know, union activity here in Santa Cruz, or at least decent wages, is 420-5020. 420-5020 is the number of the Santa Cruz City Council. It's a 24-hour number. You can call at any time. You can either leave a message for the whole council or for Mayor Riley at 420-5022. A caller, I've got a question for you, and so does my co-host here,
yes.
Jeffrey Gale. I'm just wondering, we had an election just last year, and this would seem to me to be a key election issue, particularly with people like Fitzmaurice and Rotkin, who were running again. Well, Fitzmaurice was running for re-election. Rotkin was running, you know, for his interminable, endless, recycled term.
Yes,
fifth
indeed.
Term. I didn't hear anybody bringing up this issue at all, even though it was that building was coming right up on scab labor. Right.
Well, I don't think the contract had been let at that time, and so we probably didn't realize we had a problem.
No, I don't know about your group, but the building was being, you know, it was going up.
Yes.
It was going up as early as last summer, so
right.
I know it's been around for a while. Jeffrey, you had a question for
us? Yeah, John, I was at the city council meeting at the beginning, and what really troubled me was when one of your co-union folks got up, you'll recall this, and said that he felt that the construction thus far has been done in an unsafe manner, and that the general public that walks through that kind of tunnel next to the building could be injured if they don't do certain things to make it safer. That really scared me, because I walk through that tunnel a couple times a day, and so do thousands of people on Pacific Avenue. That to me was, I don't know if you remember that gentleman that got up and detailed for the city council how unsafe it is, when the crane is unsafe too.
Well, that's a very good point. Those sidewalk protection areas are supposed to be built to certain standards, and he alluded to the one that they have there is not. And then when we were picketing that one day and they were pouring concrete, I noticed that they were spewing concrete, was coming rolling off the building, and was getting wet concrete all over the parked cars that were right next to that pedestrian protection area. And they actually had a fellow out there with a rag and a bucket of water trying to wipe the concrete, fresh concrete, off of these parked vehicles. And, you know, I mean, who needs that, right? But his point was well taken, because as the structure gets taller, the impact of any debris and stuff coming off the building becomes more severe.
Or
and
could a slight earthquake, John, very slight earthquake also really, cause the crane to go whatever?
The crane essentially is probably safe, because it was, I'm sure it was inspected by the state. But the other issue that he raised that was very good was that when they dump the concrete in those very narrow columns, and they're not using a pump, but they're using a big dump chute like they were using when we were picketing, what happens is the concrete falls with such force that the aggregate tends to settle out on the bottom, and it forces the concrete and the sand, the cement and the sand, up. And so what you have is a cold joint between what was already there and what you're putting in now. And because of the method that they were using to put the concrete down into those forms, that forms a weak area there. And the column is the main structural element that holds the entire structure up. So if there's a fault with that concrete, even if it's only a few inches, then that creates a weak point. It's kind of like hacking out the better part of a base of a tree. So the thing is tottering on what little is there, and then the reinforcing steel is essentially the only thing holding it up.
Caller,
so that was a very good issue that he raised.
Yeah, caller, appreciate this. We're on a time crunch here, so I want to thank you for calling in. Is there anything more you want to say before we hustle you off the air here?
No, and it was very good for you to take my call. I really appreciate it, and let's hope that we can do some good for all of citizens of Santa Cruz and maybe hopefully turn this project around.
Yeah, caller, if any of your union members or perhaps the other union or just interested members of the public want to discuss this issue further, I have a long show on Sunday from 9:30 to 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'd be happy to have somebody as a live guest who wants to go into this issue in greater detail.
Excellent.
Give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Off the air, 423-HUFF.
Gotcha.
And I will try to arrange it with you. And if anybody has any further questions about this issue, please leave the question on that line, the Huff line, 423-HUFF, and we'll take it from there. Thanks, caller.
Thank you very much.
All right. And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. The notorious Bubble King, or some call him Bubble Head, very few to his face, of course. Tom Noddy has entered the studio. Tom, welcome to the studio, and what I'm going to do initially here is to give Tom an opportunity to get comfortable. I'm going to play a bit of an interview with a didgeridoo player who was recently harassed by police downtown, and we're going to get kind of set the scene. Now, Tom has been an advocate for street performers as well as a local resident and an old-time van dweller, plus being, of course, a world-famous performer himself. All these things may come together, and you'll have an opportunity to comment, question, and throw your 15 cents into the pot as we proceed with the program. Stay with us. Seems to be dead air for some reason, and I'm not sure why. Let's give it another moment here. Let's see where we're at. Looks like the tape is playing, but the it's not getting out on the air for some reason. I think we have a bad connection, and I'm not sure how to deal with that. If we have a techie hiding in the wings, come on in and help out the technically challenged here in the studio. While we're doing that, however, I will simply take this opportunity to roll forward with Uncle Tom here. Not an Uncle Tom by any means, but I've known Tom for it's been almost 30 years now, 25 years, something like that. We first met at the around the Scott Creek Bluff roundup, so to speak.
The roundup, yeah, get it on, little doggies.
So you've been on the air here before on Free Radio, Tom. You talked a lot, and I tried to make your influence felt and your opinion heard around the street performers issue last summer when the city council was essentially trashing the street performers guidelines, and I kind of wanted to kind of lead in with that if I could have gotten this equipment to work properly, and I hopefully will. Maybe that'll be the subject of another show, but I know that the two of us ran into each other after a period of time when we hadn't seen each other, and you brought up some issues that I thought were very important around the issue of the communities, local residents who live here, and you're one of them, right? You are a local resident, that is true?
That's right, yeah.
And how long have you lived here?
Let me see, 23 years. In 77 I came here living in my van, but sometime in the early 80s I actually moved into a house.
And you've been pretty much at the same location?
Actually, when I moved into this house, I decided, I'll live in Santa Cruz. Before that, I was drifting around, living in my van or without a van on the road for 10 years. And I decided, I'll pick Santa Cruz and I'll live here. So I rented this room in a house. And at the same time, not trusting that I'd really be in the same house, I got a post office box. And I started paying for that so that I wouldn't have to keep changing my address when I changed locations around Santa Cruz. And now it's 23 years later, and I'm still paying for that same P.O. box because I'm still not sure that I'll be there next year.
It's an endless hippie problem, which I'm quite familiar with. But you actually have lived in the area, although you've been spending a lot of time away doing your performances, whether it's up at Eugene, I guess it is.
Mm-hmm. I've played in Ashland, too.
And you've been over in various cities in Germany of the... But of course, you've avoided France since you wish to be a patriot, right?
No, I've played France. Paris has just opened a new Vaillete, kind of a vaudeville theater. But I know what you mean. And that I guess we don't say France now. We went to that freedom country.
That freedom country, yes. It's not really free, but we call it. Well, we don't talk about it at all. We simply, however, use the name France or French. I won't get into that.
A friend of mine is a freedom chef.
Freedom chef. Yes.
Classically changed, trained freedom chef.
Yes. And freedom cooking and all that sort of thing. However, you your main act is for those who don't know, and there may be some out there who don't, is that you are a man who uses actually instruments that are now illegal downtown unless you are a professional performer.
I don't think that one passed, that part of it passed, Robert.
Actually, I can show you I'll pull out that law later in the show. Actually, I have it in my back pocket. I can pull it out now. An interesting part of the downtown ordinances conduct section under the new Riley Porter laws passed last summer. I sure hope I have the right page here. Is
the same people you talked about are now wondering what could this illicit activity be.
And I will read you the appropriate section, and perhaps you can get people to guess which of these activities, in fact, you are a master of and do for money.
Oh, a contest.
It's kind of like What's My Line here, bringing up the old show. No person, after having been notified by a law enforcement officer that he or she is in violation of the prohibition in this section, 9.50.020, shall, in the community commercial, neighborhood commercial, beach, central business, tourist residential zoning districts, intentionally throw, discharge, launch, or spill any solid object, including but not limited to footballs, hacky sacks, baseballs, beach balls, frisbees, or other similar devices, or liquid substance, with the exception of bubble street performers who otherwise comply with all applicable statutes and ordinances, or otherwise cause any object or substance to be thrown, discharged, launched, spilled, or to become airborne. Now,
well, there's a bubble exception to the law then.
The bubble, no, it's not a bubble exception, it's a street bubble performer exception. So,
well, as somebody pointed out, somebody who was confused by this, I don't know why anybody would be confused by a law that's perfectly clear like this, but that guy asked, well, doesn't it mean then if I'm blowing bubbles, by definition, I am a bubble street performer? I mean, isn't that the whole... I mean, to be a bubble street performer, you're not required to, have a hat out or do anything spectacular with the bubbles. They're pretty spectacular just by themselves, right?
Well, I like bubbles, but I know that you've done some incredible things with bubbles, and that's what you, in fact, make your livelihood off of, is bubble performing before large audiences.
Yeah, but that woman, you remember the woman who was cited for blowing bubbles that
Karen
then flew into
Casey.
The traffic?
Mm-hmm.
Casey, yeah, that's
mm-hmm.
right. And the great bubble bust of the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she was, in essence, a performer, or so it seemed. I mean, the whole idea of the policeman's idea of what was happening is that people would be distracted by the bubbles that were going by. So, I mean,
but
that
not
itself...
by bubble performers.
Well, that in itself is a bubble performance. If people are distracted, if people are watching the bubbles, I mean, here you go.
We could hire you as a lawyer.
Okay, I'll fight all bubble cases, bring them to me.
Yeah, so the bubble man is stepping up to the to the podium, so to speak. But actually, the reason I called you had to do with another subject that you also are quite knowledgeable about and have been actively engaged in, but haven't had much publicity around. And I don't think there has been much publicity on the subject, and that is the gentrification issue in the neighborhoods, the attempt of some conservative neighbors, some conservative residents of Santa Cruz to pass laws fencing in parks, making it illegal to park in various areas to essentially eliminate, dare I say it, hippies and counterculture people. Am I being too paranoid here?
Well, that was certainly the inspiration of some of the people who joined it. I don't think all of them who were in favor of these parking restrictions that you're talking about would just describe themselves as conservative. Some of them were just, looking for a place to park, an assured place to park, some benefit over their neighbors or the people from outside of the neighborhood. But yeah, there have been several attempts and an expanding attempt now to reserve parking for the people who live in the neighborhood over those who come to use the facilities that the neighborhood provides, or otherwise just put their car where it is. Or
right. Well, I mean, I think that's a more perhaps even deceptively innocent way of looking at it, because we've recently seen the city pass citywide permit parking, which as far as I understand it, and again, my knowledge of this is imperfect. I have had several long conversations with Mark Addato, in fact, a long interview which I haven't played and hope to play it sometime in the future, maybe get an updated interview. He's with the Public Works Department. He put together this new citywide permit parking law, which was essentially rammed through the city council. And I say that because it was passed in the afternoon, all contrary criticism, and there were dozens, scores of people who signed petitions against this, was, I would say, largely ignored. Although I guess there were some concessions made to downtown workers who were one of the large groups opposing this. The idea being that what the city council was doing was it was taking all the space that is currently free parking and selling it back to people, making it permit parking. And again, the point is, as you pointed out, is that the university and, let's say, the boardwalk and some other areas in the city tend to attract out-of-town visitors who park their vehicles and thereby, you know, make it more difficult for people who are residents. But instead of dealing with this issue directly, by either, you know, I don't know, making it more expensive generally to come to the city, perhaps, I don't know, I'm not sure what a solution is, more establishing more parking places, establishing a better transit system where you don't have to use the downtown in that way. Maybe you could use it as a more of a plaza-like idea, which some have said. They're using the approach that I guess was used in Tucson, Arizona. It's either Tucson or Phoenix. It comes from another city far. Maybe it's Boulder, Colorado. I'm not sure. It's a distant city idea that is sort of being implemented here. And the thing that really struck me about it, because I'm concerned about civil rights for poor people, was the fact that there's also attached to this the removal of all free parking at night, even in areas which are, for example, metered zones currently at night. You can park there downtown. Why shouldn't you? No one's using the parking places. But there will now be a proviso to eliminate all this for people who need to park, let's say homeless people, poor people who need a place to park their vehicle at night, even though the city has seen fit to say if you sleep in your vehicle, that's an additional crime. But people sometimes park their vehicle and then, you know, walk off and hide somewhere, sleep somewhere else. But now, if they do that, their vehicle is going to get booted or could get booted in a much more easily facilitated administrative process. And I've got to admit, I don't have all the details of this really clear, and I'm going to try to go into this later, but we did oppose it when it reached city council several times, some of us here at the program, myself and other activists, and didn't get very far. But this is only a part of what's happening around your neighborhood. You're in the Loudoun Park area, right? Loudoun-Nelson Park?
That's right. I live across the street from Loudoun-Nelson Park.
Laurel Park. I know you're trying to be fair to residents. You don't want to mislabel them as conservative when they wouldn't so describe themselves, and that's my label. I'm interpreting, based on conversations I've had with you,
Robert, I don't think we're in much disagreement about this. Yeah. I attended these meetings. In fact, I think mine might be a more severe position than yours. I think that some people are, making an effort, with self concern. I mean, they're concerned about themselves and joining with their neighbors to get this benefit to themselves. Or what they believe parking will be a benefit to themselves.
It's not
anyway.
Just assured parking, but it's to get rid of people in the park, right, who they don't like, the dogs in the park and the hippies in the park and the people parking their vehicles in the area. Is that true, too, or not?
That was something that happened several years ago, yeah, and actually it didn't even come down that way. But let me just set this a little bit. I think that the intent of the neighbors in organizing was to address an actual problem that they've had, which is parking in the neighborhood. Around the Loudoun-Nelson Center, it's a very specific thing. There's at the noontime when there are senior lunches and some other noontime events going on, it's impossible to park nearby. It's you just drive around and around. And at night when the events are happening at the Loudoun-Nelson Center, it's very difficult to find a parking place as well. To address that, the neighbors on just around the park signed one of these petitions, and you could get 60% of the neighbors to sign the petition, then they could get this parking permit program established, and they did. It allows 2 hours of parking to anybody with or without a permit, and that's 2 hours, once your tire is chalked, it's kind of how it works. People at the Loudoun-Nelson, people using the Loudoun-Nelson Center can get a permit so that, it helped them. Actually, it was an absurd idea for the neighbors. They thought, if you look at it quickly, it looks like, oh, yeah, we get permits, we get to park there, and we have a benefit in the fight for parking over those who don't. But in truth, the only time there was any fight like that going on was either during the senior lunches. And come on, who wants to send the seniors 3 blocks away so they can walk to their lunch? Nobody. And so the Loudoun-Nelson Center gave them permits. So you had no advantage over them. They were the only ones you were fighting with. So it didn't help you during the day. It could conceivably have helped you at night, because the nighttime events at the Loudoun-Nelson Center are the other time you have trouble parking. But the permit was only required until 6 o'clock. So it didn't help you then. It was really an absurd idea. There was, however, as you pointed out, an extension of this idea to this is how we'll get rid of the deadheads, it was at that time, who were hanging in the park. And when I say at this time, that was when the idea was initiated.
What year was that?
Oh, man, you're going to test my long-term memory.
Back in the early 1990s?
Yeah, this is the mid-90s, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so there was an effort made to do that. There were several proposals made by neighbor meetings. What are we going to do about all these hippies, these deadheads who are hanging out in the park with their dogs, where they're eating their food and all these other awful things that people do? And among the proposals was, why don't we make no dogs in the park? That might help get rid of them. Why don't we make a permit parking thing around here? That might get rid of them. Why don't we just make it a neighborhood park? Why don't we put up a fence around the park? Why don't we? Okay, they didn't go that far. In the end, the neighbors, some of the more conservative ones, literally wanted a 6-foot chain link fence around the entire park.
And the group that was involved with this was a group called the Downtown Neighbors, headed by Robert DeFreitas and William.
Well, at that time, Robert DeFreitas was not active in that, but William Rebell was very active at that time, mm-hmm. and he carried this idea around.
6 foot. Would there be a barbed wire on the fence? Or
he actually, I mean, really, let's be fair. He wanted to mitigate the whole thing and point out to me many times that there would be vines planted. It wouldn't look like the fear that we have.
A kinder, gentler fence.
A kinder, gentler chain link fence
around the park.
6 foot around the entire park.
The new Santa Cruz.
Well, he referred to it.
Santa Cruz.
He referred to it, and it sounded pretty good, actually, to a lot of people, as the European urban park concept. Man, that always sounded like cappuccino to me. That's so nice, a European urban park concept. I argued, it turns out effectively, several times, in neighborhood groups to these same people, that you know, I'd been to Europe quite a bit, and they were nice. I mean, if you go to London, it's a hard, gritty city, London, you know? It's concrete everywhere. But periodically, you'll see these little green areas surrounded by a spiked fence to which the neighbors have a key. Mm-hmm. And only the people in the immediate neighborhood are permitted to, and even they can't walk on the grass. You kind of stay on the trails and walk among. Mm-hmm. But still, it's better.
Do they have criminal penalties? Do they shoot you if you walk on the grass?
They don't shoot. They don't shoot. Come on. Mm-hmm. This is London.
Oh, London.
Cops
right,
don't shoot.
Oh, I thought they had guns now. No,
there are some special cops that are called in certain situations, kind of SWAT team kind of guys. Mm-hmm. But
they could call in USAID.
It really works out in London that the cops don't have guns, too, because they end up getting really good at cooling issues out. Uh-huh. They come into some fight. And their whole job is to make this calm down, mm-hmm. instead of coming in with bully and pulling the, you know, hand on the bolster and making the thing happen. It's really a skill that they've developed. They talked me down out of street performing in places where I had every right, but the guy was so nice, I ended up agreeing with him.
They talk you out of your civil rights. That's great. That's a new approach.
It's not new. It's a long, well-honed approach in London.
Well, I know that Capitola also has these gated areas, because I remember coming up from a beach one day, and finding I couldn't get out. I'd been locked onto the beach after dark, so I was illegal no matter what I did. It was interesting. And you had to have a key to get through this locked door to get back onto the street on either side. So maybe this is the perfect solution. Those who have will have a little more and a little safer, and those who don't can go to Fresno. Isn't that the answer?
Well, let me reiterate what really happened with this neighborhood group.
There was no fence.
They opposed it. The vast majority of neighbors always opposed
it. Now you claim that you were to some extent responsible for this, didn't you? Didn't you characterize the fence a certain way that, should we say, added a humorous element to the dialogue?
Well, I referred to this European urban park concept as cappuccino, or sounding like something as lovely as cappuccino. But in fact, you know, these things in London actually are nice, and in Paris they have them as well. These kind of locked-in little green zones, and they're better than nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, even though they're locked
in San Francisco too, in the Tenderloin. Yeah. You know, that's true.
But they're not better than open space. No. They're not better than letting your eye gaze from here across the green swath to there. They're just not, you know. And at first, when you heard the idea of a European urban park concept, it sounded so nice. But when you put that in the context of compared to what we have, it's less. This is not a benefit to get this, you know, a cup of cappuccino right now. I mean, you might do better without the caffeine. But So anyway, it kind of died.
So through your reiteration of this as the cappuccino fence, it became more,
I think I helped people to look at another perspective in some of those meetings, and I kind of dogged several of those meetings. It was tried again in front of the downtown commission. It was tried again in front of the Parks and Rec. It was tried again in front of the Loud and I dogged those meetings, and I helped people to reconsider this idea. But I don't think it was all about to happen anyway, but I think I did help to...
And there was a small fence put up around the Children's Park area, which was...
That was a good idea.
Like a two-foot-high
fence. That's a little fence, and at first they actually did put a chain-link fence, even though they'd promised otherwise, but I raised some hell, and they took that out, and they put in this nice kind of wrought iron thing, which was what they'd promised in the first place. And it's a very short fence, and it's intended to keep the tykes who were playing on the swings and stuff from running out on the street before Mom could catch up with them. That one, I was concerned when they first proposed it that it was, you know, step one in the big chain link fence plan, mm-hmm. but and nobody's gone further with that. This is that little fence. It's nice.
Mm-hmm. So we have a nice little fence.
And in addition, so the fence idea didn't go for the park. Some of the other more extreme ideas didn't go for the park, but people did like the no dogs in the park thing, and that passed.
Mm-hmm.
They also liked the idea of the parking permit thing. Enough people signed that. Many of them weren't really attending these meetings. They just signed it because, do I want a permit? Hey, it's hard to park around here. I'd love to have a permit.
Mm-hmm.
So that idea kind of carried the day in the neighborhood. But the dog in the park thing kind of did get... in truth, the Dead Rod Tour, a bunch of the Deadheads left town, and when they did come back to town, there's no dogs in the park, and it stopped being a popular place.
Mm-hmm.
For the buses to park and people to hang. And so kind of the dog in the park thing solved for the neighbors this problem of people using the park, people who didn't live in the neighborhood. But they'd already started this parking permit idea, and mm-hmm. it had a life of its own, and it kept on going. The numbers were in. It was in front of the city council. It was in front of the downtown committee. It passed. It eventually passed, even though it had no effect on the Deadheads in the park thing. That was over.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it was living, and it went ahead, and now we have this parking permit thing around the park. And so the neighbors, by fighting City Hall and by persisting, were able to create a situation where they have to pay to park in front of their house. And they have no benefit in having these permits. There is no benefit. Your only helps you against the people who are using the Loudon Nelson Center, and they get permits for free. So we gained nothing on it. However, I have to say, there are parking problems for people in the surrounding in residential areas around the downtown. Not in my neighborhood, but up the street on Lincoln. Some of those people are concerned that the people who work downtown, they come, they park in the neighborhood, and then they walk to work. They come back later, take their car, and they go home. But for the whole day, these cars are occupying spaces in front of their houses. And so they have trouble parking, and they were trying to address that. How can we get these people to work downtown not to park in front of my house?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's I can understand that it's a problem, but it's a problem for the people who work downtown, too. So the solution being proposed was one that would solve it for the neighbors, but do nothing to solve the problem of the people who work downtown. So this permit parking, and it keeps growing, because, you know, as soon as they put this permit thing around the park, suddenly all the cars that didn't have permits parked just outside of that zone. I happen to live on a corner, and so I suddenly lost parking. As soon as I started paying to park in front of my house, I lost parking. But it spreads like that, because then the next neighborhood, just beyond the zone, becomes highly impacted, and so they have to pass it. They vote for it, and they pass it, and it spreads, and it spreads, and it was spreading haphazardly around the city like that. Around any zone where it was established, it spread to the next zone, and they would take a vote.
Sort of cancerous growth.
Yeah. And
Jeffrey has a comment here.
Yes. You know, what I find so frustrating is that in the city of Santa Monica, where I lived for 5 years, and in Berkeley, both populations are about 150,000, double the population of the city of Santa Cruz. The same thing goes on. I mean, did you ever try to park your car in Berkeley, California recently? There, you have to have permits. I mean, most of the neighborhoods, you cannot pull your car up. And, you know, last night, the mayor of Berkeley, California, Mr. Tom Bates decided to go homeless for the night, and it made a big front page story here in the San Francisco Chronicle. I have urged Mayor Emily Riley at City Council and on this show that she really needs to get a grip on what's really happening in her city. She's a good person, but she doesn't make the connect, in my opinion, between the deal where we're spending billions of dollars to fight a war in Iraq and maybe Iran and maybe Syria, and we just did in Afghanistan. But the bottom line is all our services are being slashed all over the country. Homelessness is the number one problem in the United States. We have 8 million human beings who are homeless tonight, 1 million in California alone. And last night I was at a town hall meeting with Congressperson Sam Farr. A couple hundred people attended. And bottom line, he's an example of someone who stood up last night. They introduced him, and he said he helped build some homeless shelter area somewhere in the county or near Monterey. But the bottom line, he doesn't get it either. They don't get the connect that Robert so courageously has been making here for years. And that you of Santa Cruz, and every 24 hours, another 100 people are becoming homeless right in this city.
So Thomas, what do you think of this? You're a man who's lived in your vehicle for periods of time in the 70s. You obviously have some sympathy for folks. Or have you just sold out and become a dirty old yuppie? What's the story here?
Well, I bathe more often now, so I'm not a dirty old hippie, although I'm getting older.
Yeah.
You know, and let me say, In this conversation, I'm trying to put in context the questions, the parking, and the legitimate concerns that the people in the neighborhoods have about parking. But I fully agree. The part of the intent, and it always shows up as part of the conversations when people are talking about their parking problems, that it would also be useful to get rid of the deadheads in the park. It would also be useful to keep those people from parking here and sleeping in their car. It would also be useful. It may not be the intended aim of some, it clearly is with others, but it's always an aspect of what's going on. And I think that's a more central question than whether I need to drive a little bit longer before I find a parking space. I think I would hope that the people who legitimately are concerned about these issues of parking in front of their house in competition with the people living downtown recognize that that's not nearly as important a problem as how it's going to affect. To some of them, it's a side issue. Well, what about the homeless? Well, that's not what we're talking about. Yes, it is. That is what you're talking about, and it's more important than your little problem of parking in front of your house. I don't want to really minimize it and say that it's that little. It is that little. Come on, it's that little compared to somebody who really has no place legally to sleep tonight.
Now, wait a minute. Now, Tom, this is the same kind of argument you made in the early 90s. I heard certain other radical homeless activists making when they were arguing the new laws about not sitting on the sidewalk. Certainly, we have a right to have our sidewalks clear of debris, of people occupying areas. We have a right to have people, these musicians running around playing bad music all over town and without any kinds of limits. Our city council has instituted a whole new set of regulations and laws that help to give the police the necessary tools to address these issues. And you were one who actually, well, I guess you spoke, you had a more reasonable perspective in the early 90s when you seemed to work out something with the authorities, but now you become sort of some foaming radical who's been attacking our city council, well, perhaps not directly in those terms, but criticizing proposals to make into law the street performers' guidelines, which is what Councilmember Ed Porter and his colleagues on the council have so efficaciously done.
Well, they haven't made into law the street performers' guidelines. They took aspects of the guidelines that they preferred, eliminated the parts that the street performers benefited from, and put into law the parts that the performers had agreed to if it came with these others. They left out the others. They took the part that they wanted. Right. I'm not happy about how they handled street performers during that time. I'm also I understand the sarcasm or irony that you were intending to insert in that in that suggestion that we have a right to have clear sidewalks and move.
There's a trip and fall hazard here.
I actually, I agree. I really do think that there is, and I think that that's a valid concern. I just think it's such a lesser concern than the central issue of where do you want them to be then? If you don't want them to poop in the bushes, where do you want them to poop? They're not going to not poop. That's not one of the choices. Okay, so there are your choices. The problem is they're pooping in the bushes. What's the answer? The answer is to outlaw pooping? Come
Fresno,
on, that's
Fresno.
Not among the choices.
Come on.
How about Modesto, where you can disappear, you know. But anyway, no. The other point is that for 7 months, for instance, I lived in a van in the Marin Headlands. It's against the law to live in a van in the Marin Headlands. I did it recently. And the bottom line is, finally they caught up with me, and they said it's against the law anywhere in Marin County to live in a vehicle unless you pay to park that vehicle. So bottom line, one of the Mill Valley police officers winked at me and said, Jeffrey, there's one particular street next to the main post office in Mill Valley where the police turn the other way and go park your van there. And I did it. But Union City, Robert knows it better than I do. It's insane what the consciousness of our entire nation is. Sam Farr last night, when I directly asked him, well, he had said at the Rio Del Mar, you were there at the town hall meeting, I asked him specifically, if Dennis Kucinich becomes the nominee of the Democratic Party, will you vote for him for President of the United States? He said, absolutely. Last night,
really?
I was the first one who popped a question right to Congressperson Farr, and I said, Mr. Congressperson, do you recall our conversation? And are you willing now to go out and stump for Dennis Kucinich to make him the next President of the United States? And his response was, I will not at this time endorse Dennis Kucinich to be the nominee of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, we can't really, I mean, I'd like to get into this. In fact, I intend to later in the show. But we can talk about it now if you want. But I kind of wanted to focus on local stuff. And it is a local issue for a lot of us. I mean, the impact of the war is local. But, I want to talk to you about this more later, Jeffrey. And I want to actually raise the issue of how the city council is, of course, failing again to bring up anti-war resolutions, as well as to deal with repression that's going on in Santa Cruz. What about repression against street performers, Tommy? How long have you been back in this time? Have you been in town for a while?
Well, I came back in February, but I then pulled a hamstring muscle and sat in one spot for 6 weeks.
Hopefully not
healing.
On the sidewalk.
Actually, yeah, I was out power walking, which means nothing. It was like walking a little bit quickly.
Hmm. But I know I've been hearing numerous complaints, and I actually have some that I was going to play, and hopefully will play if the equipment actually begins to work. Let's see if we have working equipment here. Wouldn't it be nice? Let's see here. Do we have working equipment?
Lack of same.
Yeah, I think we have
day,
no working equipment.
Sunny Sunday,
we do have working equipment. Excellent. Well, I don't know how much time you have, though, Tom, because I know you only had half an hour. Do you have time to listen to a little of an interview and give your comments, or would you like to just sort of comment on the situation? How's your time situation?
Well, why don't we talk for a little bit more before you start that?
Sure.
Have you started it?
No, I can. I'm going to rewind it, and it'll be available for us. Go ahead. What's your thought? You had something you
want? You were asking me about the street performer.
Right. I asked you if you'd received any.
Let me just give a little background for. Yeah. Maybe you've already filled in your listeners on this subject before I arrived, but.
We talk about it a lot in other shows, but summarize. Go ahead.
Yeah, for 23 years in Santa Cruz, there's been an agreement between the street performers, the downtown merchants, endorsed by the Downtown Merchants Association, the city council, the police, and the downtown hosts. That is voluntary guidelines for street performing. What we agreed was that the street performers themselves wrote a list of guidelines, which are essentially, if anybody reads them closely, a list of the rights of our neighbors, meaning the people in the shops, mostly.
And other performers.
And other performers, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And we just sort of spelled out the rights that they have, and we facilitated getting that information out to the new performers as they come into town.
Mm-hmm.
Partly we did that by having the downtown host distribute them. Partly we did that by handing them out ourselves, dropping them a guitar case, have a conversation with the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially what we believe the street performers' guidelines are a written version of the unwritten rules to street performing.
Which is play for an hour. If somebody asks you to leave, we ask the person who's listening to be tolerant for an hour, and we also ask the person who's playing to realize after an hour, they should consider moving on.
That's right. Some performers, you know, don't always look around. They set up in a spot and they play and they see their audience coming and going, and they say, hey, you know, I'm not playing too long and it's new people all the time. And they sometimes forget that there's a guy right there in the shop behind them who's been listening to their set the fourth time around now. And we said, hey, what about him? I mean, whether he owns the shop or works in the shop, let's give him a cut him a break, and you would just move to another spot, so that he doesn't have to listen to your set.
This was done under pressure from a proposal to criminalize street performing back in 1980 or so, right?
That's right.
But I want to ask you something about that while we're here with that one. Was there a lot of police pressure on street performers even at that time, using various existing ordinances to move along performers just for the preference of merchants at that time? Were they using other laws?
Yes, and I'm not sure that it was the preference of merchants, certainly not as a group. Steve Bennett, Street Salad Serenade, wonderful street band, used to play here. Steve's still in the music business, really a good band. They were cited under some kind of noise ordinance or something, and Steve went up and down the mall and asked the opinions of the merchants, and 70% of them were willing to sign something indicating that they supported street performing. That was 1976.
Was this largely then a police department activity where they kind of decided they didn't like the...
Yeah, and some of the merchants. There were some of the merchants, especially at that time, there was a big question about whether Santa Cruz was going to change. I mean, it was changing. It was really in the air. It was going to happen. Prior to the kind of build-up that came with the moving of the university here, it was a retirement city, and mm-hmm. it was a summertime resort town. Mm-hmm. And, we still had Leask's department store, and you could see by the fashions that they chose to put on their mannequins in the window that they were not appealing to the young people who were now on the streets, hanging out, sitting on the planter boxes, but not alone. I mean, they were joined by all these other people who are now coming out on this new redesigned downtown mall.
Which actually was, at that time, a Pacific Garden Mall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there were also, at the same time, people got it confused then, they've had it confused since, that it was the merchants versus the performers. And it wasn't. There were a number of merchants, progressive merchants, they became called, who not only philosophically supported the idea of the change that was happening in Santa Cruz, but in fact were selling to those people. Mm-hmm. Not least the department store.
Bookshop Santa Cruz
was a good example. And so we appealed to those merchants. We ignored the other ones, the jewelers who were mad about people being out there. I mean, but we talked to these other ones, and we kind of cut a deal with I was appointed to the Mall Advisory Committee of the City Council. The City Council was very conservative. This is 1980. But there were two of them on
the... And you got the street performers' guidelines.
We got the street performers' guidelines. We negotiated it with the merchants, and we amended it their way. The performers agreed to the changes. The merchants agreed to the changes. We got it through the downtown the Mall Advisory Committee. Then we got it through the City Council. The very conservative City Council approved the voluntary guidelines mm-hmm. as the way to approach street performing rather than passing anti-street performing
and
laws.
Part of the reason you did that was because there was some argument on that the City Council wasn't assured that the court decisions would all go their way. There was some... And there still is, actually. There's court precedent that says that there's a right to do things, for example, even on the streets of Santa Cruz is not permitted, like to display your CDs. That's considered, for example, that's acceptable in New York City under federal court rulings that are not precedent here yet, but that, you know, have not been overturned by the Supreme Court and could well become precedent. And there was a similar, I mean, there was, you point out, there was a give and take, that some people wanted to stand on their rights and, mm-hmm. and demand, you know, going for more of rights to street performers, and others wanted to say, let's not put it into law, let's put
That's
it in
right.
a situation.
Even the one-hour rotation policy, which the street performers agreed to, mm-hmm. was something that, you know, we suggested that we might not agree. What the law permits, it's first a number of courts have ruled that street performing is First Amendment protected. Mm-hmm. Okay, if street performing is First Amendment protected, then you can restrict it in the same way that you can restrict other First Amendment protected rights, which is reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions. That's the wording of the court.
Provided there's a substantial government interest involved.
That's right. Mm-hmm. But reasonable time, place, and then reasonable is something you fight about, mm-hmm. right? When they want to pass a law that says they have to move after 20 minutes, they have to move after a half hour, they have to move after 2 hours, you go into court and you end up fighting about what did the court mean by reasonable.
Mm-hmm. I was down in Santa Monica at the time that the city council was, shall we say, wrangling over how to construct the 3rd Street Promenade and what the rules should be as far as not allowing any automobiles to drive up and down the 3rd Street Promenade nor park on the 3rd Street Promenade. So I'd like to ask you, After that was back in the early 80s, and then of course here in Santa Cruz you had the devastating earthquake that hit the Pacific Avenue Garden Mall. Wouldn't you think it would be a good idea, and I've brought this up to council, to not allow any automobiles to drive up and down the Pacific Avenue Garden Mall, nor to park on the Pacific Avenue Garden Mall. Make it like the one in Santa Monica, and have 3-hour free parking where, you know, the merchant stamps your ticket off on the sides, and that way I think everyone would win. Right now tourists are afraid. Someone at council, by the way, Robert, the other night, two women testified in front of the council that they are upset that the Santa Cruz Police Department doesn't put more police on the street in the area of the Metro Center on Saturdays and Sundays, because the crime rate is up, right. Drug dealing, et cetera, et cetera. So my question to you is, do you agree that they should rethink this whole idea of having automobile traffic?
What do you think, Tom?
What do you think?
I'm absolutely for it. I mean, it's gorgeous in Boulder where they did that, where they turned the downtown into a pedestrian mall. There are problems that are unique to every town, every situation where you try it. In Eugene, Oregon, they tried to do it. It failed badly. They also had a lousy program for street performing in Eugene. They wanted to allow some street performing, but then they overregulated it to the point where it didn't work for the street performers, particularly the good ones who are on the road, not living in town. So they weren't there for audition night, which happened once a month. So it excluded the good performers, and so they couldn't help. I don't know that they would have made the big difference. But some places, yes, some places, no. Santa Cruz, a number of the merchants, Neil Coonerty, by the way, was a long time in favor of the downtown pedestrian zone. A number of merchants...
He knew that Santa Monica works. The Third Street Promenade has been highly successful. It's a win for everyone. Jerry Rubin said it. Right. In many ways, it is.
Boulder as well. Boulder, Colorado.
Although you'll hear arguments from merchants that there are other ones where it's failed, and you get all kinds of negative
That's
arguments.
Right.
But I'd love
so
to see
both
some
sides.
Debates on
and,
that.
And the other problem, and there were a number of debates, particularly at the Downtown Association, when a number of merchants brought that, long before the hippies or anybody else was calling for it, a number of merchants really wanted exactly that. The progressive merchants, when they came in, I was around in the late 70s and the early 80s, and it was an issue then. The biggest problem, or I don't know if it was the biggest problem, some people just resisted the idea because they don't want to do more things to encourage more people to hang out downtown. They'd rather people move along and shop, you know. Mm-hmm. But excluding them from the conversation for the moment, there were still those who wanted it, and those who pointed out that there are a number of shops downtown that are not situated in a way that they could receive deliveries only through a back door. Some can, some can't. And so you would have to have some vehicles coming, and they said, well, okay, so during certain hours, some of the places that do that, during certain hours, you can, and then you have to work that out with all of the delivery systems for all of the different kinds of businesses, whether they can come. There are legitimate problems with it.
But they did in Santa Monica. They all work together, and it works.
Yeah, then there was an effort that Coonerty put forward to, okay, how about if we only do it on Sunday, when deliveries generally don't happen anyway? There was resistance, because there's resistance in general to the idea of facilitating the idea that downtown is a place to hang, right? The planter boxes, when they were put in, encouraged people
to
sit down.
Throw your money in the stores and leave. Thank you very much.
That's right. And that was in 1980 when the street performer restrictions of a ban was proposed. It was part of a very large package of corrections to the downtown that were put forward by the old guard. And the old guard primarily said, it's a shopping area. What you need to do is take out everything that encourages people to stop and just make them move and shop.
And essentially, the old guard has kind of won, ironically, in 2003. But I want you to know that you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's 96.3 FM you're listening to. In the studio with me is bubble performer, though not really a street bubble performer. So perhaps if you did perform on the street, you would be considered in violation of the code, because you haven't really been engaging in street bubble performing for many a moon.
The second I go out and perform on the streets, I am a street performer.
Yeah, but do you have really the credentials? Because I know you used to be a puppet performer on the streets, but I haven't seen you do a bubble show on the street for a long... When's the last bubble show you did on the street, Tom?
Oh, you know, right after I was on The Tonight Show, I tried to go back out on those streets.
When was that?
Well, I loved it. That was the early 80s. And I went back.
Oh, fine.
No, I know. I've been on the street since then, doing bit shows as part of a larger show, you know.
A teaser. Luring them in.
Exactly. To encourage them to come to some indoor show that we
have.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't look like Beverly Sills. They call her Bubbles. You know?
Oh. But the problem for me was, once people knew what I mean, it used to be if you were walking along the street and suddenly I was able, in a still moment when the wind wasn't blowing, to pull off a bubble inside of a bubble with smoke inside the inner one spinning around. It was just like this magic happened in your life as you walked by. You didn't come for it. I loved that aspect of street performing. People don't come for it. It just happens to them in the middle of their lives. They go on and wonder later if they really saw a thing like that. Then once I was on The Tonight Show, And people, hey, come here, look, this is the guy I told you about. He's spinning, do that one with the spinning. And I can't. The wind's blowing. I can't. And suddenly, oh, he can't do it. Suddenly I was a bummer to people. I was just bumming them out. They're, oh, man. So I'm not out there.
So the expectations were too high for you to do the limited bubbles that you can do in the windy days in Santa Cruz.
That's right. And it's always windy in Santa Cruz. It's one of those towns. I should be living in the middle of the country where the wind don't blow. But
if you want to talk to this has-been bubble performer and his host, not to mention Jeffrey Gale, give a call to 427-3772. You can call in and chat. We're talking about a variety of subjects. I originally asked Tom to be on the show to talk about his experiences as a resident here, who's been active. And indeed, the neighbors, it's always good, you pointed this out to me too, Tom, that the neighbors felt good that they had done something. Unfortunately, they did the wrong thing. They got a permit parking proposal that actually inconvenienced them and also sets the stage for a major bigotry. I mean, and frankly, some of the people who are in this downtown neighbors association, I've heard them, you know, throwing around charges about homeless people and people in vehicles being, you know, child molesters and things of this sort that I find not only distasteful and inaccurate, but downright hate crime oriented to me. I mean,
the Downtown Neighbors Association has changed through the years. There was a time when they were very active and very progressive. They were one of the forces in the early days for bringing progressive changes to the scene in Santa Cruz. And then it went inactive for a good long time. And then it was sort of revived with the same name. People continued to think it was the same sort of organization.
No, it's actually the Downtown Bigots Association.
I didn't say that. No,
of course not.
But it changed quite a bit. They took on a very different tint and put forward very different kinds of proposals than was the initial intent of the Downtown Neighbors Association.
Mm-hmm. What's happening? Well, again, let me just jump once more back to the 80s, though we're spending a lot of time in the past. But I think it's interesting. I like the past these days, considering where we're at now. What was the police? The police were cracking down on street performers, and this was a police-initiated measure in the late 70s, early 80s, to criminalize street performing, or did it come from, you know?
Yeah, there was a proposal by the police chief Peeney at that time, and it wasn't, his intent wasn't that it be the primary issue. Street performing is just one of the many things that they would do. They would lower the planter boxes to 6 inches to discourage people from sitting on them.
Which has now been done.
Yeah.
There's virtually no sitting on the mall, except in three areas, one of which has been privatized into the Sushi Now.
Actually, it was interesting, because at the time, I helped to reframe the question for a lot of people and pointed out that, you know, if you lower the planter box, I mean, really what they were trying to do was get rid of the people they didn't care to look at, poor people hanging out,
yeah,
and poorly dressed. Which is one of the reasons we have a military, so that poor people dress up and look good.
Camouflage, pretty cool, man.
So,
at the farmer's market, should people dress up as farmers?
Yeah, that's right.
There you go, that's a good idea.
So the idea was to lower the planter boxes to 6 inches so people wouldn't sit on them. And I pointed out at the time, if you do that, I mean, right at that time, lots of people were sitting. You know, the lawyers at lunchtime came out and had their lunch, had a beer, you know.
They were waist-high, beautiful
with their lunch.
They were
really nice. Yeah. But I told them, you know, if you lower it to 6 inches, we're the only ones you won't get rid of. We'll sit on 6 inches. We'll sit on the sidewalk if you get rid of the whole thing, I told them in 1980. If you get rid of all those planters completely, we'll sit there. You'll just get rid of everybody else, which, you know, I think was really the biggest problem with their thinking all along the way. They thought the idea was to do things, create policies, you know, automatic sprinklers or whatever they could do to get us to get out of there, rather than attract everybody else there.
Right.
We don't look nearly so bad when we're part of the thing that is attracted partly by the energy of the counterculture. People are attracted to it. And when there's a really active downtown and the seniors are coming out of the hotel and sitting down and talking to the hippie and the lawyers are having the lunch and the other, and it's really alive, it looks great to the visitors and to each other, and it also moderates the behavior of everybody downtown.
Mm-hmm.
When you pass these restrictions, when you make an effort, when you create these headlines in the Sentinel, this thing about this fear of these people downtown, then you get rid of everybody else except those who haven't as much choice about where they're going to be anyway, and then you end up with the downtown looking like just us. And actually, I don't think just us is a great idea either, myself. I think it was the mixing that was really the fun thing.
I agree. Well, a year ago, a lot of us activists were concerned last summer about the increased police harassment and the prospect of these downtown ordinances, which expanded the forbidden zones from 6 feet in front of a building where you couldn't sit to 14 feet, essentially making it illegal to sit on 95% of the space downtown and in almost 100% of the space on all other sidewalks in all other business districts, because most sidewalks are 10 feet wide. They're not even 14 feet wide. I mean, they're narrow, less space. And also there were the laws were passed making it illegal to peacefully ask for a dime after dark from a seated position or in a group of two, and even with a sign silently became part of the law, not just from, I guess it was 6 feet from a building, it also became 14 feet from a building. So to peacefully spare change became illegal.
That's the kind of, if there are people out there who want something, I mean, I prefer to have them ask it. I don't like when they're just quiet. There's a group of guys, I don't know what they want. If they say, hey, you got a dime, I'm trying to get, a bus fare to get out of town, I'd like to hear it. I'd rather they talk to me. I'd rather they hold up a sign, tell me. I like people with bumper stickers on their car. I like them to tell me their whole trip. I mean, put it out there. Let us know what's going on. We're not better off not knowing what those people want from us. I just think let them ask you and give them the dime or don't give them the dime or encourage them to get a job. I think all of that is healthy. Let that go on. This idea that we ought to restrict and keep them from, we're just going to tighten the thing up. It doesn't help.
Has that happened? You were here a year ago, and now you're here again. Are things markedly worse, or are those of us like myself who are raising the alarm and suggesting that this was a new repressive era, even more repressive era than before coming in, have our predictions in fact been justified, or do you think we were too alarmist? What's your sense?
Well, I'm not sure that I have a good sense. I have to say that I am a bit surprised that after this, when did that happen? In the spring last? When did they were?
Summer.
In the summer, they were outraged, and there were petitions among the merchants, and they were going to really get tough this time, and hell with all this tolerance and all that foolishness. We're really put the word out there that we're taking back our town from those people who were cutting each other with knives and prostitutes and stepping over bodies and based on that, they passed a series of laws to restrict hacky sack and street performers,
frisbees, and bubbles.
Chalking the sidewalk,
except for the street bubble performers.
None of the proposals addressed the drug use, which was the only thing they talked loudly about, the violence that they saw, the gang attacks. They didn't even propose anything that would address the issues that got them the headlines and created the fervor and the fear downtown that drove them to the petitions and drove them to the city council meetings. They didn't even propose anything like that. Instead, out of that, they got enough energy together to pass an anti-street performer attack at City Hall, and an anti-hacky sack, and an anti-panhandling. And actually, I don't know. I walked the streets recently to see, how effectively they're... I mean, because they at that time, they had cops four abreast walking down the street citing people. But I don't know. I look downtown, and I don't see any great victory, even for those who really did want to get rid of people altogether. There's still people sitting on the sidewalk there. There's still the guys playing guitar over here. I suppose there are now weapons in the quiver of the police
issue.
Who will then apply them here and there as they
see. That's really the issue.
Yeah, I think that was always the intent.
No, the intent was to justify what the police were doing. There was a lot of complaints about police harassment, and you certainly can't complain in the same way about police harassment if it's legal behavior by the police, because they're simply enforcing new laws that the city council has passed.
And the information tables issue is very important, because, for instance, this town hall meeting last night...
Now, the information tables issue, we should say, is the move-along law.
If
you have a display device, you have to move along every hour, no matter where you are. And you cannot be within 10 feet of a building, a bench, a crosswalk,
a water fountain,
an intersection,
an ATM,
a telephone
machine.
The information table situation is crucial, because last night, the town hall meeting, the Santa Cruz Sentinel only had a two-paragraph story buried inside of page one about the town hall meeting, and the bottom line is I actually finally, Robert, got to talk to Tom Honig yesterday and urged him to tell the news editor to make sure and cover that meeting. And by the way, Tom Honig said that he is planning to run the schedule free for Free Radio Santa Cruz. But the point I'm making is that Jerry Rubin, when he at his table, which I used to help him with,
activist
that
Jerry Rubin of Southern California, infamous yippie Jerry Rubin of the 60s.
Right, in Santa Monica, it was important that in front of the Midnight Special bookstore, we would sit there and pass out literature, because most people did not even know about this town hall meeting last night. The television station said because of a budgetary crisis, they couldn't cover it. And the Santa Cruz Sentinel buried the story. And so the only way you could even find a leaflet was to go in the back of Neil Coonerty's store and search through all the flyers.
If they let you in. I myself, of course, would be arrested if I walked into his store.
Right. And it's very important that people be able to sit and pass out literature to people walking up and down the Pacific Avenue Garden Mall.
It has to be said also that these laws are enforced differentially. Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has never been given a ticket for sitting there for longer than an hour, and they never will. Even HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, doesn't get ticketed. They go after people who are really homeless and really poor, like the Peace Vigil, that had genuinely homeless people there at the vigil who were there 24 hours a day trying to do what I think middle-class people should have done, but were not willing to do, which is light a candle against the war before it started. And it was disgraceful how they moved on that. But again, I guess the question I'm looking for, Tom, is, and perhaps you haven't got enough of a sense of what's going on downtown yet to really sense that. I can play you, I was going to play this tape about the didgeridoo player who found himself suddenly the target of police and of hosts. And again, interestingly enough, misapplying the laws. They didn't even cite the laws properly, the laws that they have. I've actually written up and gave to you an actual literal set of these laws, though, again, the laws are not the issue. The issue is the blank check for the police department.
Well, I think the laws are an important part of the issue. They can be used by them. But as you say, the intent, and I think it was pretty clear this time, too, the intent was to pass a law that the police could use. Sometimes they were pretty upfront about it. They said they would only apply it when there was merchant complaint. Well, that's almost by definition opposed to the First Amendment. Merchant approval, for example, in the Goldstein versus Nantucket case, which was settled by a federal district court in Massachusetts, District 1, it said merchant approval is irreconcilable with First Amendment protection. It is just what the First Amendment forbids. And yet that was the clear intent of the legislators when they passed this laws this time. They intended that they would pass a law that could be used, and they thought they were giving something to us when they said, but it's okay, we'll only use it when there's a complaint by a merchant against a particular performer. They thought that that was something they were giving to us. No, that is, specifically something that the First Amendment forbids. It can't be up to the merchant in the shop to determine what happens on the sidewalk in front of his shop. He just fronts that. The downtown of our community is it's the well in a village. It's where people gather around the well. They have conversations. They tell stories. They raise each other's kids. They tell lies to each other. They gather. They nurse the babies. This is the well. The downtown Santa Cruz is the well of our community. And they're lucky we let them set up shops along the well. Actually, I saw what happened after the earthquake when there weren't enough shops down there. I think we have a symbiotic relationship with the merchants. I like the idea of having shops around the well. But I don't think that that gives them some priority in determining what happens around the well. They're just fortunate to be there. And if we can, create a situation, an ambiance down there that'll help benefit their business, and their benefit will help benefit us by having people out there and keep a productive community going, I think that's the ideal. But we're not going to get it by giving priority to one party over the other in that situation.
You had a debate with the Councilmember Kennedy on KUSP, I think it was, last summer, which we replayed here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Kennedy made some comments that he felt this was all going to kind of blow over, this was all going to pass, that this was simply, really, these downtown ordinance extension restrictions were kind of an election eve, he didn't use this, but sort of a gesture, a reassuring gesture to the merchants. We're concerned about what they're doing, but really, it's really essentially the police will continue to do what they always do. This is just sort of a summer storm that's going to blow over. Has that happened?
Yeah, well, again, I don't really have a good sense of what's of the heartbeat of downtown at the moment, but it may well. You know, it won't remain a hot issue night and day. The biggest problem will come when there is a problem. I mean, in the past, street performing, before we had the street performer guidelines, there were no big problems with street performers. When the problem arose, that is to say, when some merchants didn't want to have it happening, or when some jerk with a guitar started raising hell and causing problems, then there was a need to, what do we do then? What happens in those moments when the new shop moves in and wants to ban it in front of their shop because they think they have a right? How do we address it then? So in general, there will be, you know, ebbs and flows of really what happens out of there. The question is, and then how do we address it when there is a problem, when the next, what do they call that, Pacific Trading, has the next problem with the next Cosmic Chris out for, you know, one guitar player and one merchant who just can't work it out. Well, we had the voluntary guidelines to address that situation. Now what we have, when those times come, when that finally arises again, you know, and we don't know what performer it will be, we don't know what merchant it will be, we don't know what shape the question will take, but the answer is now enclosed in this stiff little law that is about 10 foot here and 6 foot here, and let's get out the tape measures and we'll all work out this thing.
Move along after an hour.
Instead of the voluntary guidelines approach, which encouraged both parties to consider the benefit to everybody in this situation, I was able to lean on a street performer and say, yeah, the lady is wrong, but you know, you raise hell, the thing's going to go in front of the city, they're going to pass some laws, you sure you want to really go that far with it? You know, there's another spot over here, I could say to him, and he could say, no, I have a right, and I could talk to the merchant, and I could say, well, you know, he's only there 1 hour. Suppose, you know, if you call in at the beginning of the hour, you both look at the same watch, you know, and he's going to move. You can tolerate it for now. We could mellow the thing out in the way that humans do, instead of the way that the law specifies these little boxes, and then you've got some cop out there with an attitude who doesn't even understand the law, misapplying the law, and then you've got these lesser-than-cops who understand even less, whose authority is the cop who didn't get it. And these downtown hosts who are really a font of misinformation. I mean, they were just going up and down the mall telling merchants incorrect interpretations that they made of what they heard from some cop who didn't understand what the city council intended when the city council didn't pass. Oh, my God. You know, why don't we just let people work them out? 90% of the time, they just go away. The other 10% of the time, we have to intervene, have a little conversation about it. And 1% of the time, it's not resolved, and I don't know. The guy sometimes is really a jerk. You know what? I don't know. Some cops sometimes lean on a guy a little bit, and he has to move.
There are other laws. Excessive noise is frequently used. Blocking the sidewalk has been used. It was used against me illegally. The fact is that the police already have a set of tools in their arsenal, and one wonders. It's just like they're frustrated at the social scene. This is what they were at least in the late 70s and early 80s. I think it's still the case. And they want more tools, thinking the more laws we have, the more likely it is we can get rid of these people we don't want to see downtown.
But in the meantime, Santa Cruz, California, made a front page story in USA Today the day before yesterday. And the thrust of the piece said that the economy is so bad and it's expected to get worse that people are not booking into Santa Cruz for Memorial Day weekend. They're waiting until maybe 14 days before. So this is so stupid because everyone in the city is suffering right now. They're not going to make the money that they normally make Memorial Day. So they should bend over backwards to let the street people perform and have a jovial atmosphere, because that's what makes Santa Cruz so unique. The city is suffering dramatically right now financially, dramatically. Gotcha. We have a budgetary crisis.
Yeah.
I do think that that's key. I think that crisis, which has been going on for a while in Santa Cruz, is what led to the fear that led to the irrational response that we saw coming out as anti-hacky sack and anti-street performing laws and stuff. It was real scapegoating. I think it was pretty straight ahead this time.
Yeah, I mean, and we have, of course, a situation with, you know, individuals who do, you know, retain their dignity and demand to remain on the street, like Jason Pascal, you know, Jason, the African-American spiritual tarot card reader who's been languishing in jail for 2.5 weeks thanks to Sergeant Butchie Baker's... initially, they went after him for tarot... I call it tarot terrorism, but actually it's not having a license and reading tarot cards as a sort of a spiritual thing on the street. Candy Jackson went after him for panhandling when, in fact, he was...
Was she the one from Jackson's Shoes?
She was one who initiated
the petition.
Yeah, right. She did. You know, he finally is... He is now currently jailed, allegedly for a... well, he's being jailed because he's awaiting a warrant from New Hampshire that they have refused to serve for the last 3 years anyway. It says, will not, don't serve on the warrant, according to Pascal, who I talked to in jail on Monday.
That was a pot bust?
It was a pot bust. He was serving a lot of time because apparently it was an elaborately orchestrated pot bust involving less than an ounce, but it was divided up, and he was intent to sell and that sort of thing. And Jason is not the most mellow fellow all the time. He comes from a different cultural background than I do. He's sometimes vituperative and loud. I wouldn't say he's never been charged with disturbing the peace, but what the Sentinel did was...
It's in his cards, Robert.
Perhaps so. Perhaps so. But the police used a variety of laws to go after him and finally just couldn't find a local law because he said, I'm going to keep coming back. They arrested him for possession of milk crates because he was using milk crates to set up a stand after they had driven him off a concrete flat surface that was anti-homeless because they have a little green fence around it. It's right there near Artisans. This is sort of the anti-homeless architecture deal. Again, it's... So I guess my concern we're talking about the problem downtown. The answer is, what should the response of the community be to turn this back? And I think your ideas of having more people downtown, a bigger mix of people downtown, and I think also adding a civil rights component where you get some attorneys who are going to say, this is a bunch of shit. If you're targeting a group of people, this is not the right way to go. In fact, it is you're civilly liable for this kind of process. And that's the reason I'm doing some lawsuits in federal court. Volunteer attorneys have stepped forward to assist me with that. But I'm frankly, you know, I mean, I'm not terribly optimistic about what the city council's doing. If they won't even pass an anti-war resolution, and we've seen that they refused to put this on the Tuesday agenda in spite of the fact that Kennedy and Porter had proposed these resolutions 2 weeks ago and now inexplicably withdrew them. I guess they thought, well, Iraq war is over, now we have to put something in about the conquest. But, I mean, it doesn't require that much of a change to say get the damn troops out of there, replace them with Iraqi or UN troops or whatever you want, but something else. If our own local city council won't do that on such a pressing issue that has broad support in the Santa Cruz community, I mean, there are those who dissent, but I think that there's broad support for that. What should we do at a local level to restore rights for street performers, to restore rights for poor and homeless people? And there's conflict between those groups, too, because I want to talk about that next. Any thoughts on that, Tom?
Conflicts between street performers and...
Well, what do we do to restore rights for street performers? What do we do to restore rights for people wanting to use public spaces who are poor?
Well, you know, it's a little unclear to me right now. I think what street performers should do is perform.
Period.
And do it in a way that makes sense, because the laws don't. I mean, just do it in a way that makes sense. Yeah, the truth is, most performers never needed the voluntary guidelines. They don't need the laws. They know what happens. You get out, you get in a spot, and if it's too tight in there, you move to a different spot. And if you get a big crowd, you tell them to leave it open. Almost all of them know what's happening, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The guidelines were useful for those who don't, for the young ones who are coming in and set up too close to somebody else.
And to reassure the merchants.
For the most part, you know, it works itself out. I think performers should go out there and do what makes sense, you know, and perform and try and make some coin, and then let the laws wrap themselves around it. And I do think it's going to come to a place if the police they already have the laws. So if the police now apply the laws in a way that leads somebody's going to take it into court. You know, and then we have to plow through and get done here what they got done in Massachusetts, what they got done in Chicago, what they got done in New York, what they got, you know, and get a court case that, you know, plays out until our rights are spelled out and what does reasonable mean when you restrict First Amendment protection with reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions. And it'll also be played out in the court of public opinion that is in the press, where the merchants stand on one side against free speech, bookshops against free speech. and performers on the other side. I know that many merchants bent over backwards to ensure that that would never become the case, that they would never be on one side of the free speech issue, on one side of it, become those who are against music, those who are against what their customers want in the downtown, what the tourists want in the downtown. Now, they've allowed themselves to be used, and some of them did it themselves. I mean, some of them just allowed themselves to be used. They didn't bother showing up at the meetings with the performers. The merchants have put themselves in that position, and if it works against them, I hope it does. I hope it works against business downtown. I hope it works against individual merchants downtown. I hope things don't come out well as a result of them responding to fear and pushing things to the point of their preference over that of the passersby, over that of their customers, over that of the community, and over that of the performers.
Are we talking? We mentioned a bookshop owner, Neil Coonerty, has had a high profile, or at least he did for a while last fall on this issue. He came out with the bumper sticker, "Keep Santa Cruz Weird." He initially seemed to state that he felt, though he was originally a great supporter of the downtown ordinances originally back in 1994, which included 6-foot forbidden zones, he said that, 14 feet was too much, and, he was kind of taking a stand in favor of the rights of street performers, and also, I guess, of other people, too, on the streets. He kind of made that comment, as I remember, at a Santa Cruz, a Club Cruise filming that I saw. But then, when it reached City Council, even though the street performance guidelines were largely eviscerated, they were eviscerated by the laws that were passed in
they're over.
In December and January, he essentially abandoned that position and said, 10 feet is a good enough rule, is enough space for street performers, which I guess gives street performers, it doesn't really give them 25% of the sidewalk, although I said they're definitely excluded from 75%. But the rest of it is also taken up with things like benches and bike racks, and there are other things, other obstructions.